Big thanks to Audible for supporting FilmSack. For a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial, go to audible.com/FilmSack.
What is that god-awful noise you're making?
Mozart, my low forehead friend. Even this wretched pit can't diminish the spirit of true genius. Life itself started in a murky pit much like this. A true genius like myself learns to seize the moment. You're the first to know that I now have plans to recreate life itself.
Monkey wannabe, this is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to FilmSack, episode 333, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian, nothing like singing Comrade Sinatra songs while on a spacewalk done away.
Hello. Hi, you have reached the voicemail of Clark Kent and Superman. Please leave a message at the sound of the beep. Beep! Hi, Super Dude and Clark Kent. You schizophrenic. This is your old pal Lex Luthor from Superman 2 and current resident of some prison in the desert. Listen, I just got a call from some company called Canon. They're offering you writing credits and me a hair skunk nephew if we sign on to a fourth installment of the series and resign ourselves to weird voiceovers and even weirder green screen flying. Hold on a second. Franks for a dollar. Hot sausages for 15 cents. What is this, 1987 New York? All right. Think about it. Lex, out.
Nice. Clark Kent was my favorite part of that. Clark Kent. Also with us, Randy, 1,000-pound load hanging by a single hair, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. I ever tell you boys about the time I had a job buying up old farms and turning them into new developments? True story. We had three very important rules for closing the deal. Number one, you always knew their daddy. Doesn't matter what they got going on nowadays, you're there to claim that their daddy would have sold by now.
Sorry.
Number two.
That wasn't supposed to be so loud. Keep going.
Number two, be on the lookout for sentimental objects. You might think no one would keep the baby crib he used to sleep in outside on the front lawn 30 years later, and you'd be wrong. Them bassinets will sink a good deal. Number three, never talk to the owner face-to-face. Send your lowball offers in the mail and then let it go. You never know when the owner might have the ability to read your mind, big, tall, gaslighting asshole.
You're
the weirdest powers in this movie.
Yeah, no kidding.
I can't wait to talk about the new powers.
The new powers are awesome. Oh my gosh. Also, finally with us, Brian, faster than a speeding locomotive, able to bake a turkey by looking at it really hard, Ibbot.
You know, it's pretty amazing. For a movie that has absolutely nothing to do with Las Vegas, Superman 4 sure has a lot in common with it. For example, everything looks kind of fake and cheap. You have a dude who looks an awful lot like the tiger-based magician Siegfried. You can see representations of famous landmarks like the Eiffel Tower and the New York City skyline with seemingly very little travel time between them. And much like Vegas, you have a whole bunch of women who wake up and have absolutely no idea what they've been doing for the last several hours.
And John Cryer.
Oh, and John Cryer. Gosh, you were gonna put it.
Like John Cryer on the street or something.
I forgot.
Almost was in there. Oh my God, that really was almost in there.
I forgot about the John Cryer thing. I tried to put it out of my head, man. Oh my gosh, it's so bad. What were they doing?
Oh no.
That was new. Who knew, dude? How old was he in this movie? Because I had totally forgotten about John Cryer being in this movie entirely.
No, I had no idea he was in this. This is the first time I've ever seen the film.
Is it really?
When he showed up on screen, I'm like, oh my God, that's John Cryer. And immediately had to like jump into IMDb and say, where was this movie in relation to Pretty in Pink?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
Just a few years later.
He would have been like 22 here, right?
Something like that, 20s.
Yeah.
According to the timeline.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Right.
So when he was doing, Pretty in Pink would have been like, what, 84 or 88? A
couple of years before, yeah, three, four years before.
Yeah,
no,
so.
Just 1 year before.
Oh, is that all?
Oh, is this,
no,
really? I thought this was
what? Out of Europe.
This is 87.
So. Oh, 87, I'm sorry. I thought this was,
yeah. So
89 or something. So a year apart.
I remember seeing parts of this somehow, but not the whole movie. I thought I'd seen the entire thing, but there's no way I have. No,
this was a TV afternoon, Saturday afternoon TV movie special. I mean, this was this should have been straight to video. This should have never, ever made it to the big screen. No.
It has the depth of, you know, like, and this is not at all a slight against CW's superhero programming, but this has the depth of like a Supergirl episode. Like it's, you know, it's everybody telling you that this thing is this problem they have to overcome is really devastating, but it doesn't feel like there's any real danger.
No,
right?
Not really.
Even when they're launching the nuclear weapons just randomly up in the air and hoping that Superman catches them.
Yeah, that was funny. Like the entire message of like, here we are in the midst of the Great Cold War, and here's how we're going to stop it. Yes. And him getting up at the UN and being unanimously voted in as a guy who can get up and talk in his stupid suit, and then him saying, I'm going to take all the weapons, and then everyone uproaring and clapping and cheering.
Okay, but you're getting real specific, and I really like a summary. Like, what's your summary of the film?
Well, my summary, I wish I had a Scott Fletcher one, but I don't. My summary of the film is Superman 4, how the hell did this get made? What a dumb movie.
What's the movie about?
So I think it's supposed to be
called
a big,
The Quest for Peace, right?
It's supposed to be an allegory to ending the Cold War.
Canon Films finally accomplishes the impossible. They kill Superman.
Right.
True, he does die in this. Superman's dead.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna argue that it's just a remake of Superman 1.
Oh, interesting. Give us a...
It's a remake of Superman 1 with an additional Superman character that's meaningless, that looks like Lex Luger, the wrestler from the 80s.
Yeah, that's true. He does. His name is, by the way, what's his name? His
Nuclear
name,
Man.
No, his character, yeah,
the actor's name. What is his name?
I have it right here somewhere.
Former Chippendales dancer.
Mark Pillow is his name. Mark Pillow. I love that.
Yeah, that's right. Pillow. Mark Pillow. And he has no IMDb picture.
He also used the only one thing from... he ever did.
Yes, yeah, his only movie he was ever in. And he was
if anybody has IMDb Pro, just insert a picture of Lex Luger, and no one will ever know the difference.
Yeah, it's kind of the same guy. But it, I don't
know. From, you know,
this did not. Yeah. This did nothing to launch any sort of career for him. He just kind of did this. Yeah. Said, "Hey, I'm Mark Pillow." Didn't even use his real voice. It was all VO from.
Oh my gosh! It was that was the best part. Gene was Gene Hackman?
Gene Hackman's voice.
You sound like me.
Yeah, you sound like me.
How come you sound like me?
That was so weird to me.
I'm gonna get Superman. No, I'm gonna get Superman.
The only thing I can to answer Randy's question, I think it's about just we're at the height of the Cold War. Reagan and Gorbachev are sparring all the time, trying to figure out what the future is, and everybody's still worried about the arms race and that. And this was supposed to be some simpleton answer for it's this simple, just put them in a big net and huck them at the sun sort of solution.
So what I think one of my points I want to make is that a lot of times a movie about a superhero will take a famous series of comics and summarize it. So you'll take, The Dark Knight, for instance, the whole thing, and turn it into a movie.
Yeah.
This feels like it only took one book, one issue of Superman, and turned it into
a
movie.
Bad issue of Superman. I mean, it honestly didn't even have really. It was like a weird Keystone Cops kind of Clark switching out of clothes and laughing. Everybody's supposed to be funny for most of the movie. Like a lot of the movie is just Clark and Superman going vut, 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 zipping back and forth so that the women aren't confused.
Did anybody else feel like it was heavily influenced by Neil Simon? That stuff.
Neil Simon, the jazz singer guy.
Neil Simon, the playwright, suite, and same time next year.
Noises off and this kind of thing.
Yeah, he did the jazz.
You
singer,
mean the whole
he?
Like going back and forth, the one double, man, the two date. Dates, double date.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I thought that was. Wait a minute. I need so to make. Painful. I need to have some. I need to make sure I'm not going crazy. I thought Neil Simon was the jazz singer. Didn't he not do that?
Oh, Neil Diamond is the jazz singer.
Was that what I'm thinking of?
Diamonds movie, The Jazz Singer.
I think Neil, I am thinking
Neil
of
Simon.
That.
Yeah, it was. Neil I was Simon. Trying to think of it. I was trying to think of a jazz singer named Neil Simon, and then as soon as he said The Jazz Singer, I'm like, oh no, that was Neil Diamond.
Yeah.
Close.
So Neil Simon wrote The Odd Couple and Barefoot in the Park, and most importantly for me, Noises Off, which is this, you know, in and out the Doors thing. Mm-hmm. I hope he wrote Noises Off. I might be wrong about that.
Yeah. Now you got me curious if Neil Simon is actually.
That's what I was thinking of.
You got me curious thinking that Neil Simon is actually like the Clark Kent of Neil Diamond.
Oh my gosh.
I've never seen the two of them together in one place.
That's right. But if you're really paying attention in a busy metropolis parking space in front of the most major newspaper in town, you might see a guy in a suit get in through one door of the car and come out the other side as Superman.
Or if you're paying attention in a subway and you see a guy go into a phone booth that has a window in the front,
you might
catch a glimpse of super ass.
Guys, none of this matters because he can just fix your brain so you don't remember it.
Yeah. So are we going to talk about the Superman powers? The kiss is they did like in two. He makes her forget. He's done this before. He's wiped her mind before.
The mind eraser kiss, which I think, you know how most kids wish, you know, they pray at the end of the night. They pray, oh, please let me be able to fly someday, or please let me be able to turn invisible. I think George Clooney always wished for having the ability to kiss a woman and make her forget the last
6 hours. Yeah.
Doesn't it strike you as like Superman's the bad guy?
Yeah, he's kind of the bad guy.
He's kind
here.
Of like doing the reverse roofie. Is that what you mean? Like,
He's kind of a dick in this.
Oh, he was such a dick in the Lois flying scene. I mean, first of all, he jerks her off the building. Oh my God, she would have an immediate heart attack.
Right,
there's no way.
The building, pulls her off,
and then halfway through the flight, he goes, "Oh, bye bye," and just drops her. Oh my
God! By the way, in every movie, I'm absolutely sick and tired of this thing where he holds her by the hand and she flies. Mm-hmm. His flying is a feat of strength. This is very well established. How the hell is she being held up by just her wrist?
No, there is so much defying. I would point your attention to later in the film when Ariel Hemingway. Is being carried up through the lower atmosphere, upper atmosphere, and out of Earth's orbit, and still has the ability to breathe, act surprised, and live and not freeze to death immediately and all that. Like, they have no care or concern for anything physics related, including moving the moon, which would completely send our world into shitstorms.
No kidding. Talk about a chick. That's a satellite in the bucket, because you never see him restore the moon back to orbiting
satellite in the bucket.
like Randy said, this is definitely a throwback to the first one where he defies. Isn't that when he flies backwards around the world?
He does, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I think what has happened here throughout the whole series, that when he said it right in his mind to save Lois at the cost of, you know, changing history, I think at that point, history decided that it was going to try to kill Lois Lane as often as possible, because in the rest of the series, there's like this Final Destination thing going on with Lois Lane. She is constantly in peril.
Oh, I love that theory, dude. That's a great theory. That's really good. And it's actually, it goes along with the Stephen King theory from 11/22/63 or whatever the name of that book is in the Hulu series, is that the past is obstinate and will fight against you. I love that idea that she
Superman
is now
is paying it back. That's the reason why he's always hanging with Lois Lane. He's trying to. He's having
the world
to
wants the Lois Lane to die.
Yeah,
but let's come around. Let's come around to him being the bad guy here. He's hanging out with Lois Lane. He's cooking a duck, but not cooking the two walls in between him and the duck. I don't get that.
Yes, it's X-ray and heat vision combined. I don't know how that works.
Yeah. The movie very succinctly establishes that he has Superman hearing, so he could hear cries for help anywhere in the world. No. There's people right now who are hurting somewhere. There's people in danger. There's people about to die from an accident. They're crying out for help, and Superman is hanging out at Lois Lane's apartment.
Right.
He's a bad guy.
But let's. All right. So one of his powers. Let's stick with powers for a second. He can cook that duck. Yeah. Great. Good job there, Superman. He has the ability to go to the Great Wall of China after it's been blown to pieces and stop motion reverse it back together is what he does.
What is that? Right.
While building vision.
And it wasn't that's like
not
reverse.
Even, that's not even a power. No, I mean, is he reversing not. Time?
No, because it wasn't like it was. It wasn't like the stuff was going rip, and like growing right. back up into the wall. Right. It was building up like bad claymation. It was awful.
Yes.
Or see, he kind of this is not totally without precedent because he kind of does this in Superman 3 with there's an oil tanker that has a hole in it, and he basically shoots the oil back into the ship, and the oil is like sitting there and hovering while he welds the side of the ship. So I wouldn't say that's unprecedented, but it's definitely weird.
But the movie establishes telekinesis way beyond anything I've ever seen for Superman.
Yeah.
He's an Omega level mutant for sure.
No, for sure. Now hold on. How does any of these new powers relate or compare to Superman 2's use of the logo Saran Wrap trap?
Oh yeah.
Because that was pretty awesome.
We didn't talk about the electricity absorbing foot power.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like stop a subway by absorbing all the electricity from the third rail into your feet.
Yeah, that seemed all right. I mean, but then again, that's like at least
okay with that one. That yeah, really bother me
because really? His body can relatively withstand it. Speaking, yeah, I agree.
He's Superman.
I agree with Randy. I agree with Randy. You're supposed
that's
to be
not
able
how
to withstand
electricity
it.
Works, right? He's not a battery. Gosh. He's not a. Right. He's not a capacitor.
No, that's a good point. He shouldn't be able to. He shouldn't be able to willy nilly decide what electricity he can absorb and from where. I agree with that. But if he, like the idea that he could grab a high voltage line like any other person would and withstand that I can live with. But that's not exactly what he did here. So you both have a good
point. Easy, even in their crap budget, it would have been so easy for him to grab the rails of the subway and lift them up so that the subway just comes up and goes up a little bit of a ramp thing and then just slows down.
Right.
That would have been.
Or what he should have done, which is just stop the train by flying and putting his hands on the front of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, the ways we're used to seeing him do
it. He should have never saved Lois Lane the first one. It would never have been an issue.
That's true. I can't say I don't disagree with that. So one of my favorite stunts or powers is consistent with his strength, but it's him lasering off the top of a mountain. And then taking the top of that mountain, corking the now active volcano next to it with the top of that mountain, which is absolutely not a solution. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Not even a Band-Aid sex.
The magma chamber has pushed up through the crust of the earth. Yeah. You're going to add maybe 0.1% crust.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything.
Right. It's not going to be like an airtight seal. Like you're going to get now you need to get lava that shoots out the sides, like when you stick your finger in a leak.
It's like taking a handful of wet mud in a rainstorm and patching a bullet hole in your chest. It doesn't make any sense.
You know what's a shame is I mean we accepted some pretty lame powers in 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. The fact that we are so outraged by some of the powers he uses here it says a lot.
Yeah.
The whole wall rebuilding thing is
right.
It's a power created because the filmmakers were lazy. Yep. That's all it is.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It's there were so many. He's super fast. He can he could heat vision up some stones and like say this will get you by until I can come back and fix it better or something like that.
Well, and I want to argue the premise. We accepted some lame powers in 1, 2, and 3. No, I didn't accept any of this crap.
Right.
Like Superman has this real established story of what he can do, and 1, 2, and 3 just built on it and built on it, and then 4 just comes along and just blows it into the space. Like it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It didn't seem to care about. Not just real physics, but also not about canon of Superman. Like they didn't seem to care about his past.
You know
what he was about.
This movie convinced me. Now, Randy, I think you said some things about offline that Christopher Reeves, this may have been one of his worst performances. I think this was the same performance he put in 1, 2, and 3. But I think as an actor, you don't know what the post product is going to look like until it's done. And he is like totally invested in some of these scenes where he's like blowing the lava cold and, you know, all that stuff. He is spot on doing his thing. He has done through 1, 2, and 3. But here, the budget just fails him because he looks stupid the way he flies around.
Yep. So I mean, stupid. And not only that, but just even dialogue, he comes off as over earnest, but not because it's any more earnest than he was in the first three. It's right. because the scene is poorly composed, the audio's bad, the timing's bad, the music behind it's wrong for it. Like, it's just a whole, the entire production won't support what is normally a passable Except Superman the, portrayal.
Well, right, and it's right. and it's missing the eye of the common man. It all, like, what is so great about Superman as an audience is being represented and having that little kid on the side of the street go, look, they're in the sky. It's a bird. Like, yeah, that yeah, no yeah. one ever does that in this whole movie.
Right. And, yeah, right. Instead, no one's amazed.
The closest thing we get to the common man is freaking John Cryer.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh no.
Oh no. he's terrible. Like, just straight, I want to just throw that out there. He's really, really bad. Now, one of the movie series that we've never seen that I keep thinking we should find and it's just doesn't show up or whatever is the Iron Eagle series. Iron Eagle 1 or Iron Eagle 2. Yes. That is the same director as this film, Sidney J. Fury.
Really?
Yeah. And I think that sounds like a good time. You know, like, I really want to know what's going on. But that guy has never stopped. He has made shit from day one. And it's 2016, and he's still got a movie in post-production last year called Drive Me to Vegas and Mars. He was in something called Pride and Lions, Conduct Unbecoming, The Four Horsemen. I could go on, but that, nothing you've heard of.
That sounds interesting.
Nothing you've heard of. Yeah.
Nothing I've heard.
Yeah. He's a real poop maker. His movies are poop.
Right. Series tend to come and go on Netflix. Right now, all four of these movies are streaming. These Superman movies are streaming on Netflix. And I'm telling you, whatever you do for your own brain, don't watch all four. You will get so tired of the repetitive music. It's
amazing, but it is repetitive.
How did they not come up with one new thing for this movie? Just one song.
They reused all of it. But they used a lot of things over and over. They used B-roll a lot. The explosion on the moon was, or the sun was used three different freaking times. They had lots of little right. double shots. And it just this felt like if I could open a book and say, I'm trying to find the definition for not trying very hard. And here it is.
Yeah.
Here it is. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Found it, everybody.
I could make a Superman movie with the credit limit on my Visa.
Yep. Yep.
True story.
Yep.
And even the opening credits were like, they were subpar.
Yeah.
And can I tell you how tired I am of that stupid letters flying off around the earth thing? Like, they used it in one and was like, all right, this is pretty cool. And it looked so much better in one. Like, everything looked like it was made of glass, the little trails that were left by the letters as they flew around. Mm-hmm.
But
this
you know
was
what?
Like,
give them some credit. That opening sequence in Superman 1 was 100 minutes long, and at least they got through it this time.
That's true. Even this one seemed long. The thing in itself was only an hour and a half long, 90 minutes long. There was a lot of stuff cut, and you can see a bunch of it on YouTube. I went down a bit of a hole looking at the older things, and there's a really bad scene where they try to do sort of a Terminator 2 style. The nuclear man goes to a nightclub and has a girlfriend and
oh no
yeah
really
yeah he's like that. He's like
is bad to the bone playing in the background
no but it's like that sort of idea where he's sort of and everyone else is like, hey man, you look really cool, and like it's really stupid. But
why do you sound so much like Gene Hackman?
at only an hour and a half, it's the second shortest Superman product of all time. Live action product. The only thing shorter was a 58-minute movie made in 1950 something. Right. They had the old black and white deal, George Reeves deal. But there was nothing has been as short as Superman 4, and it still felt interminably long.
It did, yeah.
Like, it just felt so
I had
long.
People going to sleep on me at my house. Mm. I had like four or five people, and by the time it was over, I was the only one left in the room.
Yeah.
True story.
Yeah. It's amazing that people, we heard from a lot of fans say, this is the only movie I ever got up and walked out of. And that's funny that you had people get up and walk out of your free showing at your house.
It was just me.
Yeah.
I mean, what happened? Where'd everybody go? Weren't y'all having a good time? Were you not entertained?
Ibbot said something interesting on Slack. He said, this ended up being one of the worst things ever, but also one of this is totally perfect for the show. And I totally agree. Yeah. Like this, I would never see this outside of the show, I don't think, unless it was just a fluke with a friend or something. But isn't that what Film Sack is? A fluke with a friend, basically.
And we've said that about a lot of films where we really, none of us would have watched it. Well, maybe Brian Dunaway would have watched it, but like for instance, like Break Into Electric Boogaloo, there's just no, you'll never work up a reason to watch that movie if you don't have something like Film Sack in your life.
Yeah, right.
And totally. This is, I hate to be comparing a Superman movie to Break In 2, but I just did. And well, I think I'd rather watch Break In 2 again.
And you mentioned
both produced by the same company, both produced by Canon Films that also destroyed the Masters of the Universe. They
destroyed or fit right in.
Fit right in, really.
Right.
Who else, Brian?
Cyborg. A lot of things we've seen on this very program, this very podcast.
Have we seen Cyborg? Oh yeah, we did. I loved Cyborg.
Jean-Claude Van Damme and
That was a shit movie.
But that was an appropriate marriage. You know, that was what you expected from canon. Right. Kind of that Cyborg.
It does mean that at some point we're going to watch American Ninja 4: The Annihilation. Right. I'm just saying.
And we are. Absolutely we are. I can't
wait. We got to talk about the canon films just for a second. Now Randy, you've seen the Electric Boogaloo documentary, which I've seen most of as well, about the canon years. And it amazed me and surprised me that they got a property like Superman, because that was really one of the bigger properties he got. And I was also amazed that they got Gene Hackman and Christopher. Mm-hmm. They got all these actors on board, even though at the time, I think everybody really knew who they were.
I think people were spent. I think people were spent on superhero movies, especially Superman. They were done with it. It was already waning. Right. 3 was no huge success. 2 was really the height of the series.
3 looks amazing compared after to watching this. 4.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I imagine it does. But at that time, I feel like it was a little bit like, well, it's not what it used to be. We don't think this is going to be a viable thing anymore. Lois Bitter gets it. And these actors are just like, well, yeah, I did that before. I'll do that again. And wasn't there a deal with Christopher Reeves where he got to, they would fund some other project of his?
Definitely feel like he made some deals, because he got a writing credit on this as well, somewhere in the credits. And so I think he was trying to branch out, but I think he was selling a soul here to try to move beyond and out of this role. Or maybe he thought, hey, if it borks up so bad, then no one will ever think it's me Superman again.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Mm. Yeah. I this entire thing just, it makes me have gas, because it just, it feels like giving up, you know, like they, like they just didn't give a shit. And this other, you know, this earlier series of movies was so important to a bunch of kids at that age. And it was huge for me. Superman movies are gigantic when they came out. It was like Star Wars again. And I was so excited for them. And hearing that music and just, I'd get so jazzed and pumped. And then 3 and 4 just were like, F you. Here's a middle finger.
It feels like, especially with this film, and I haven't seen 3 in I don't know how long. I actually thought parts of 3 were in 4, and I think I confused which movies I'd actually seen. But it feels like the entire production process, not the film, but the entire production process, they gave up about a quarter of the way through and just said, what's the quickest way we can get to the finish line with this thing?
Yep,
I agree. And it's so important. Post-production for a Superman movie, any type of special effects movie, is going to be so important. It's one of the most important things. I think we'd forgive a lot of bad acting, but when you have Superman flying around in front of the green screen, and he's holding people's hands and flying them around, and you know he's carrying the Statue of Liberty. Oh my jeez, dude, we were killing the Statue of Liberty during the late 80s.
The Statue of Liberty in this film is so so poorly used. Like, okay, you only see her ever from the front. Any shot is her flying sideways across the New York skyline or the Metropolis skyline, or that's Metropolis. So why is there a Statue of Liberty?
Yeah, why is it New York? And because I don't know. But but that was during a time that we were doing the restoration of the Statue of Liberty. So it was very much on our minds. But
it was after that whole Ghostbusters thing.
I wouldn't mind being corrected here, but I'm not sure that as a comic book reader, I made a distinction between Metropolis and Gotham having these real set Chicago and New York City settings. I think that
supposed to be unique. It was supposed to be a a representation of New York.
Right.
But it was supposed to still be a separate place because there was still a New York in the DC universe.
Right. And that's
the Daily Planet, the Daily Planet slash Warfield News.
Whatever they saying, named it. I don't know. That didn't bug me so much as everything else in the movie for some reason. The whole, like, you have to put yourself back in an 80s frame of mind for this whole movie, right? Like, you have to like not be offended on behalf of everyone else in the world for the American way. Like, just let that go, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm Superman. I'm here to save the world. Give me your nukes.
By the way, all I could think about during this was the movie after he made Death Trap. Did anyone see Death Trap?
Oh, I did see Death Trap.
Him and Michael Caine.
Making out.
Yeah. So him and Michael Caine kissing on screen was a shock to me when I was younger because I thought, oh my gosh, Superman, he's gay. Like, this is really weird. And then last night, all I could think about was, if you want to get down to like story here, this is Clark Kent / Superman kissing Alfred and putting him to erasing Alfred's memory potentially. I love to think of it that way. So there you go. There's like your Batman Superman crossover right there.
Wow.
I like it. Now I see why there's Batman versus Superman because of this movie.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what? The Batman versus Superman thing came up for me. I thought of that as well because you've got Superman in the United Nations. I know it wasn't United Nations in Batman versus Superman, but speaking on behalf, and it was a very different thing. Like, he walks in and everybody's applauding in this film. And of course, in Batman versus Superman, he's not as much loved at that point.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So we said earlier that the failure of this movie contributed to canon canceling their plans for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. How did they have the Spider-Man? Like, I don't get how these rights worked back then. I mean, clearly it's different today.
Marvel was on the verge of bankruptcy for so much of the 80s that they were ready to sell. They were probably ready to sell Stan Lee for the highest bidder.
True story.
If there would have been an eBay in 1985, you could have bought your very own Stan Lee.
Wow.
No, but that was the thing. I mean, they were basically selling all their big properties. And I guess Canon got not just Spider-Man, but also, I think, Captain America.
And somebody else had, Corman had Fantastic Four, right?
Yep.
Right. Yes.
So how did they get back to how did Fox end up with those? Like, I'd love to know is there a book somewhere? Someone's got to have this story.
That would be cool. Like, did Fox buy Spider-Man back from
Films? That was Sony.
They paid, according to Wikipedia, Golan and Globus, the group behind Canon, paid Marvel Comics $225,000 over 5 years. Plus a percentage of the film's revenues to get Spider-Man.
My gosh.
Again, you could almost do that on a credit card.
Yeah.
You could buy Spider-Man.
but you got to remember, back in the day, these were kids' comic book properties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was it. No one in Hollywood could have imagined. Yeah. No one.
Yeah.
These creative types who make movies for adults, none of them could have imagined anything other than, oh, well, now we got to go buy an animation studio in order to make a Spider-Man movie.
Well, what happened was you had all the kids who had, the reason this was all, you know, cheap and, you know, discount counter stuff, they grew up and they're us. And those people are now in power, in charge, and making movies in Hollywood. And they all love this stuff growing up. So now they're throwing, you know, the idea that something was under $300,000 for the rights to Spider-Man is so laughable. I mean, they spent that on the suits for the first Sam Raimi movie. Like, it's just so so weird how things can flip in 25 years, and it completely flipped.
At some point, I would like to try and dig up, because the Captain America film did get produced, and it went straight to video. But it came out in 1990. It had Ronnie Cox. Yes. It had Ned Beatty. It had Darren McGavin. It had Melinda Dillon, like all these people we know, and this guy named Matt Salinger who played Captain America. But I barely remember. I think he drives around with
a motorcycle, van. Right?
It was a motorcycle. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a van too, the Captain America van?
Yes, he would launch himself into the back of the van a la Knight Rider
style. Yeah, totally. That's where he kept me. But wasn't it? But maybe I'm thinking of a TV show version of that, and not
that might
film.
Be 1979's TV series. Yeah. I'm trying to remember.
I can't remember either.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Oh my gosh, I love that Evel Knievel kind of costume he's
it's
got.
It's so
going
good.
On
it's a helmet with the big wings on it, and it's like a big fat biker
he's got
helmet.
He's got a clear shield in front of his. Oh, he's got a clear shield. Oh, I love it.
It's great. That's it. It's great.
Totally it.
We need to watch that for other reasons besides.
Right. Right.
Besides this. All right. So that Canon thing though is on Netflix. The documentary. What's it called?
Electric Boogaloo.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny that they reference that specifically. Electric Boogaloo. Or I guess that's the. Well, I don't know. Whatever. I want to see.
Yeah,
that.
Because what they do is a ridiculous dance of buying and producing.
Yeah, and they so if you put them and Corman together, what a weird thing that is. Like it's like this. Right. They. I mean, we have it now with like the ripoffs.
Asylum.
Asylum films, I guess. But it's
well, and Canon is now doing what Asylum used to do.
Oh, they're, really?
They didn't. Canon didn't make any movies for like 20 years, and now they're back and they're making movies.
Oh, really?
Called The Boogaloo Kid and Fast Break the Movie.
Furious and Fast.
Furious and Fast.
Nights in Tokyo.
They're Canon has a movie on the books that's in production right now called Galactic Cop.
Oh, I'm into that.
Coming to FilmSack in 2018.
I would watch Galactic Cop, dude. That sounds great.
Yeah.
But I want them to be. Galactic are they Cop being? Too. But are they being earnest about it? Like, are they being? I don't mean Ernest P. Worrell. I mean earnest.
No,
like,
but yeah.
I mean ironic. Or,
are they trying to? Are they doing Sharknado style, which I don't really like? Or are they doing it like for real? Like, all right, we have this low budget. Let's get out there and make a movie with what we've got. Be serious, you know. Like, I want them to be serious. And if they are, then I'll watch their movies because that's the kind of cheese and crap I appreciate because it's earnest cheese and crap.
Cheese and crappers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cheese and crappers.
Delicious.
Nothing like a good snack on cheese and crappers. Stuntman John Lees suffered a career-ending injury in this film.
Performing, I thought you meant, but you mean he actually had like an accident?
Yeah, I had an accident on the moon thing. It led to a bunch of court cases, and I guess they settled with him. But
so he had an accident on the moon thing. Yeah, it's interesting. So was he like, what was he doing?
Yeah, that doesn't give details, but he was one of the he was stunting for one of the two actors and got hurt in all that scuffle up there.
Probably when he was getting pile driven into the moon. I mean.
Right. That is
right.
So
oh my God,
dumb.
That whole scene of like getting hammered into the moon.
I wanted to die.
I actually liked that. That was one of the few things where I was like, okay, this is Superman. Mm-hmm. This is how this is supposed to go.
Yeah. That was bothersome. Everything about that was hard to watch.
The whole fight scene and figuring out, oh, so if I cut off Nuclear Man's access to sunlight, he's basically ineffective.
He deactivates instantly. He has no battery backup.
Right, yep. Exactly. Yeah, he is.
Yeah, somehow he did fine in the building, by the way. They seem to forget this rule when he was running around inside of that building where they had no sunlight in there, but fine.
Whatever. Oh, right, when he was going up through every floor. Like, he managed to find the one spot in the building where you could go up and not go up through somebody's desk or... Yeah. Or
refresh my memory. What's the ultimate fate of Nuclear Man in this movie?
He put... Hold on, now I can't remember.
He's wrapped up and thrown into space, like he's...
Right, so he's just drifting across space.
That way he's like the Phantom Zone. He can come back in a sequel or
something.
Wasn't
he in something, though? No, I guess not.
I figured from the get-go that Superman would eventually deactivate him on the dark side of the moon and then just bury him somewhere on the dark side of the moon, and then he's done forever. No one could ever find him.
Exactly. Why would you drag him, like, take all the effort to, like, drag him in an elevator all the way out to the moon and then not put him on the dark side of the moon?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. Money! All I think is Pink Floyd songs when you say
that. By the way, I get it. By the way, stop your email right now. I get it that there is no constantly dark side of the moon, but once you've got him to it at the moment... He's deactivated. Then you just bury him.
Yeah.
And he'll never see the sun again.
Yeah. Then he's in the dark underside of the nothing. Yeah. He can't get sunlight.
Until he's uncovered by some, astronauts and transformers.
Yeah.
Which would have been awesome. I would have loved to have seen a little Nuclear Man costume land. That'd be great.
Yeah. But this is the problem with the movie on the whole. It's very inconsistent about what people are capable of doing. And he is lots of times in the dark. He's in the dark all sorts of times and not powered down, only when it's convenient for plot. Marielle Hemingway is apparently a mutant herself because, again, she can survive in space. There's lots of moments like that where I just go, oh, come on, guys. Like, really?
Let's talk about the subplot of the corporate raiders taking over the newspaper.
Oh, yeah. That was so weirdly jammed in there, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was that actually a big deal back then? Because like nowadays, it would be a like, I'm sure there's movies coming in the next year about fake news and stuff like that. Like,
what was the guy's name? The not the housing bubble, but the other one, the loan Madoff scandals.
Oh, Madoff, Bernie Madoff.
No, before all that, before the Madoff stuff. This is 80s. It would have been like, I remember Wall Street was out. Wall Street. Everybody was a jackass in Wall Street, and everybody was cheating everybody all the time. That was the culture of the time. So it was Cold War and it was corporate corruption. And the idea of hostile takeovers, I think that was totally a thing of 1987.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that's what they were trying to portray, but it was so wedged in there. It was like, here you go. Here's a half cocked piece of shit story idea. And it just was dumb.
And the bankers were going to be like supportive to give him the money, and this thing was really, really full of high ideas.
A Superman subplot has to have a Superman weakness. It has to be behind a lead wall. It has to have kryptonite in its pocket, or who cares?
Yeah, nobody
Superman
cares.
Superman will just come in and fix it.
Yeah,
I fully expected John Cryer to have like some kryptonite in his hair or something. That's why it was that skunk color.
Well, and it was kryptonite gel. But it's only kryptonite that me, you, and every other viewer is scared by.
I'm feeling weak. Just looking at it. I
can't look at John Cryer's hair or his
pants.
It's
funny because he flipped that hair to just the opposite in Hiding Out, which was that same year.
Oh my gosh!
He had blonde on the sides and dark in the middle, and then in this one he had blonde in the middle and dark on the sides, right?
Yeah. It's funny to see.
Sure.
Him. Yeah. It was funny to see a movie this far out and see him and then see him as anything other than what I picture him normally as, which is kind of a fussy, nerdy, neurotic sort of character.
Oh no.
This was so different for that, and it just threw
I have this Garfield without Garfield idea that somebody's gonna figure out a way to take Two and a Half Men and take Charlie Sheen out of it entirely, and then I'll watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah, you might you might like it without Charlie Sheen. I think that's a fair
One and a Half Men.
Like Garfield without Garfield or something like that. Yeah,
One and a Half Men would be super easy.
I have some other thoughts about strength and super strength and other problems. Why wouldn't it be if a single strand of Superman's hair can hold a giant 1,000-pound ball of steel? Why can it can withstand that strength, but Lex Luthor can come in there with a Stanley tool and cut it?
And his mortal strength. That's the main thing going on there. I'm willing to believe those clippers could have cut the hair. Does Superman's hair not grow, by the way? Is his hair perpetually the same length? Or does he have to go to a mirror and use his like heat vision to cut his own hair? I would like to know.
He did that with shaving. Like, he looks into a mirror and shaves by using heat vision on his chin.
He did?
Right. That was in the comics, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Holy I would prefer it if he keeps a big big metal snippers like that in his bathroom to trim his nose hairs.
Just like Stanley Stanley lock cutters.
Right.
Shunk. It's usually used to cut like high tensile steel rods and things like that.
Well, ting.
That totally
I'm the billionth nerd to sit and wonder, do his nails grow? You know, like, does Superman shed his skin, or is his skin just permanently this weird substance?
Like a Superman snake peeling skin thing. That'd be awesome. Just to come in by Superman's house. He's got a big old Superman skin sitting there. I'm down with that.
You know what I mean, right? That like, we all have skin that's constantly shedding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. You know, but we're always we're always got a little skin coming off of us, but
except for Nuclear Man, who has self-growing blades.
Yeah, what the hell? Nails. Got some sweet Wolverine business with those going on there. That was kind of cool.
Apparently they actually did it in Lois and Clark. You can see a little video of Dean Cain using his heat vision to shave himself in Lois and Clark.
Wow.
I know we did this for Superman 2, but I want to do it again. Who are your favorite and least favorite actors who've played Superman? And I want to lose Christopher Reeve from this conversation because this movie made me hate Christopher Reeve. So let's just not talk about him.
Well, I don't know if I'm alone in this or maybe I'm weird or an outlier, but I think the new guy is actually a really great Superman. I think his movies, Cavill. I think Cavill's movies suck, but I think Cavill is just fine for it. They're not doing a good job of writing around him to make him stand out. But I think Henry Cavill is actually quite the good Superman pick if they could just make a good movie around him.
It's kind of a Doctor Who question. Who's your soup?
Yeah.
Brandon Routh for me is, because he's got that good combination of goofy and silly. Like he's probably the closest thing to a Christopher Reeve that we've had.
I actually think he's better than Christopher Reeve in the
role. I think so too, for sure. Yeah, right. But his combination of you believe he can have powers and still be that kind of silly and goofy. Actually, I love him on Legends of Tomorrow. I think I'd have a hard time watching that show if it weren't for him on there.
Yeah, he's great. And I'll say this. He's got the same problem Henry Cavill has, though. They couldn't make a good movie around him. Like, they just made a mediocre kind of shit movie. I mean, I think a lot of us might say that Superman Returns was better than the two recent things. Maybe, but still, it's nowhere near what it could have been. And, you know, you have these opportunities with some good actors, with the right faces, with the right mannerisms, the right everything, and you just can't make a good Superman movie around them. And I want to
come back to Superman Returns after Randy. So you're Brandon Routh as well. How about
for
you?
Sure.
Yeah. What do you say, Brian?
Yeah, same. Got to be.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I'm sorry, but Dean Cain is so bad.
I can't say that I don't enjoy it.
That was such a different thing. It was like a weird. I don't even know what to compare that to.
It wasn't even a super. It wasn't even really about Superman.
It's about relationships.
I mean, it was more about
plus
love for the Smallville guy or the guy who plays him on Supergirl.
I like Tom Welling. He's fine.
Yeah,
he's fine. But again, it's such a different. It's hard for me to say best Superman, but he's good. I like Tom Welling actually quite a bit.
I like the Lex Luthor they have in Smallville. He's my favorite.
Yeah, he was
Lex
great.
Luthor.
Yeah, what happened to him? He's not doing anything now.
Yeah. I don't
know what that guy's doing.
Definitely not Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman has always been a huge question for me for Lex Luthor.
See, the Smallville is the best and worst of everything, though, because Smallville has freaking Bo Duke, which is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, Pa Kent was Bo Duke.
He was the dad, right? Yeah, he was the dad.
And then it has the worst thing, which is Lex Luthor should not be in that show. I hate that they just dragged the one biggest villain from all of Superman's experience all the way back to his childhood. Give me a break. Right.
Yeah, that kind of stuff is annoying. That show had a way of just jamming everything into the Smallville period of his life. And that always felt a little off. But the show got it right when it came to the heart and soul of Superman. What it means to conflict with yourself and struggle with the idea that you're a foreigner in a foreign land, but you have responsibilities and, you know, you've got the kind of strength that you could kill everybody if you wanted to, but instead use it for good. Like, they nailed that part of it, and I always appreciated that series for that. I thought that was great.
That is you bring up an issue that I have with a lot of stuff, like the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where everything that makes Indiana Jones who he is that we love in the movies apparently all happened to him on one train ride with the circus, you know, the scar on his chin, his fear of snakes, him dealing with the whip, his hat, you know, all that stuff apparently happened in the space of 5 minutes. And on Gotham, apparently every Batman Rogues Gallery character all happened about the same week. They all grew up together except for Batman himself.
Yeah, they have this revisionist history thing going on with these TV adaptations, and it's a little frustrating because I think there's a lot to be told there that you don't have to pander to. Like, there's no reason Gotham has to have every one of the villains and have you go, oh, look, it's the Penguin when he was young. Like, you don't need to do that. Just give me
because then you're thinking, oh, well, then my superhero is a moron who forgets that this person from his childhood existed.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you, the comics
are kind of...
Oh, you're
the same Penguin. Oh.
The thing Wait I hate about
and you hung out with a woman named Catwoman. Crap! How Weird. Did I not put this all together?
Go ahead, Dunley.
The thing I hate about comics, but have also prepared me for TV shows, is the fact that there's so many alternate universes that it's okay. When I watch this, I kind of throw it all out. I'm like, it's fine because we're talking about an alternate dimension where all these things happen like this. And I'm okay with that. And I hate that in the comics, but it did prepare me for a lot of this TV stuff that they do. This seems all alternate to me.
The CW shows are all that today too. I mean, they're all retellings and all mishmashes of good ideas from the comic books. And yeah, I think I'm okay with them, but I think I'm more okay with them now because it's not being handled so poorly. Like, they're actually doing a pretty good job with this stuff. The acting's good. I mean, Gotham will always piss me off because I actually think it's kind of good, but my problem with Gotham
really good,
is it's not Gotham Central, which was such an amazing comic book. And the fact that they didn't take that opportunity to tell a police procedural in the city of Gotham during Batman's time as Batman, where Batman never shows up, is just causing issues for the department and stuff, is really good. If no one's read that series, go find the graphic novel or the trade paperback, whatever versions of them. It is so freaking good. And it'll just piss you off that Gotham isn't that, because you really want it to be that. Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I know we also did this for Superman 2, but it's been a couple years. Give me your best and worst villains, like the villain you like the most, villain you hate the most from Superman.
From Superman, the entire movies?
Yeah, entirely.
The movies, or the comics and everything.
Whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's like, Superman.
Like, Superman is such a crap rogues gallery, though. I mean,
but I'm saying there's a Superman movie coming. Who do you hope is the bad guy? Who do you hope is really not the bad guy?
All right, I do have an answer for this.
All right, go ahead.
Best and worst is Bizarro, because it all depends on who does Bizarro. I love Bizarro from the comics, but anytime there's ever been any attempt to like make a Bizarro either in the cartoons or whatever. It's been horrendous, and if they were to do a Bizarro, I think they could hopefully do it right.
Yeah,
right.
My least favorite is Chitara, or what's her name from the cartoon? I can't think of her name.
From
Cheetah?
It's not Chitara.
Is it just Cheetah?
And she's always going, "That's perfect, Lex Luthor, perfect."
Right, right.
Yeah, freaking hate her, dude. Yeah. And what would you say, Dunaway? Got a favorite or a least favorite?
Absolutely, my favorite is when Zod. Anytime we got General Zod.
Oh yeah.
I mean, because he's every series I've seen him in, he's always spot on. Because Zod's great. truly a Superman versus Superman. Instead of having to always go to the Kryptonite. You
know, yeah, I don't like he's just Kryptonite. A pissy. He's an angry Superman, and he's great.
Yeah,
and he's always good. And I even liked him in the first newer Superman movie. His name was great as that. So yeah, Zod's a great pick. I didn't pick my favorite though. I think I'm gonna go with Black Mantis.
Oh yeah, Black Mantis.
Or
so
Black Manta. I guess it's Black Manta, right? Black Manta.
Right.
I think that's
Black Manta.
Black Manta. Yeah,
I think he's cool. I keep going back to Super Friends, and I hate to do that. But that's where my
Black Manta's maze.
I mean, the dude created a model of his head to use as his base of operations.
Mm-hmm. All of those guys were like, you know what? We need a place to meet. Okay, well, how about we do it in a giant head that looks like Black Manta in the swamp? And Black Manta's like, yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Hey, why don't you come back to my place? It's, you know, got the two big glowing eyes.
And, yeah, we got a room with a podium where Lex Luthor can stand there and go, these super fools won't know what hit them.
You know what? I don't even know what his superpowers are, Black Manta. I don't even know.
He was poised as like an anti-Aquaman guy because he did a lot of water stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So can he only talk to like orca whales or something? Only bad.
I don't know what his deal was.
That's funny.
You only talk to Grouper.
Yeah. Right.
Grouper. I could control Grouper.
Grouper. I don't know what his powers were, but this is a good point. Yes, Randy.
I'm going to say my favorite is something like Doomsday, a villain that is his equal or greater in powers, because that's what ultimately matters with Superman, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when Superman has to fight Batman, I'm always like, okay, really, like, you have to pull a bunch of tricks, right? Yeah, someone like Doomsday, I'm all right, it's on. This is going to be a fight that's actually meaningful.
What'd you think about his betrayal in the most recent when the Batman
versus Doomsday and the BVS.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That was a shitty. That was a shitty Doomsday.
It wasn't the worst part of the film.
No.
Yeah, it wasn't the worst part of the film, but the worst. The worst for me is everybody's is most everybody's favorite, which is Lex Luthor, because he is so mortal. He is so. I mean, sometimes he's actually. They actually give him like Horcruxes and shit, but he is so easy to defeat. If Superman will ever just rip his head off and throw it into the sun,
right?
You know,
done.
No, he like, should, but he's a super genius or whatever.
Is Solomon Grundy a Superman?
Oh, yes,
villain? Yeah, he's absolutely. There.
Okay, I do like Solomon. I didn't know if he was part of another.
But you like
Flash's...
him because the way he talks is that pretty much what you like.
Yeah, it's basically. It's right. basically Bizarro without the cracked face.
Yeah.
Right.
He's basically Solomon Grundy's like the zombie undead, basically sort of villain that he has to deal with. Solomon Gundy, Ted Bundy is really great in the comics. Solomon Grundy's handled really well in there. So I'm with you. That's a good runner up. But the biggest, I mean, people are probably yelling this at the show, but Superman's biggest villain is himself sometimes.
Three really. I really like three better than I remembered. I went back and watched three after I watched four, and I'm like, wow, this really tackles some pretty tough issues. And I really dug when he split and he actually had to fight himself.
Yeah,
You know, that was Clark Kent.
I just couldn't
Superman.
Take it. How can you take it seriously when the cover art for the VHS and poster of the film is him carrying
Richard Pryor. That's the cover art does hurt that movie a lot.
It has to. It looks like a parody.
I will give it that.
It looks like a parody. It doesn't look like it's a Superman.
The marketing probably hurt that movie more than anything. If you just watch that movie standalone and don't consider it a Richard Pryor vehicle, but just a movie with Richard Pryor in it. It has some redeeming factors.
If Richard Pryor was a John Cryer level celebrity at the time, then they wouldn't have had him carrying him. It would have been something else. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like it's just because Richard Pryor is a big deal. He's a name that sells.
Because you're thinking Superman only carries, he only carries little kids and women he's trying to get with, right? That's his thing. Yeah. And so you're thinking, so was Richard Pryor the love interest?
Nuclear warheads.
Didn't he carry Supergirl on the cover of that famous cover of Crisis on Infinite Earths? He's carrying Supergirl, and that's his cousin.
Yeah.
Well, but basically wants
creepy.
To get with
this he's into it. He's into it. Listen, on Krypton, I'm who's to judge? Who knows how they
They might have different social rules in Krypton. Yeah. I mentioned I did want to come back to Superman Returns. So at the very end of Superman 4, Superman drops Lex Luthor back off in the same pit where everybody's still working, and says, "See you in 20." And I had to do the math on this and go back to IMDb, but it would be 19 years until you'd see them in the movies again in Superman Returns.
Oh,
that is funny. Oh, that's great.
That's hilarious.
I almost want to add that to the trivia section of IMDb if I can.
You may as well nestle it in there where they say that Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger almost got the job.
Right.
Why not?
Frankie Muniz was considered for the role of Superman.
Yeah.
The only problem I had with that scene was the fact that those guards had to go, "Paperwork! You just can't drop them back here."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. My thinking was also his little anytime Superman gave a speech in this movie, my eyes rolled so hard they were literally looking at my brain. Mm-hmm. It was so bad.
Yeah. I hope he captured some of that for clips.
Oh, for sure.
I also, anytime Lex Luthor was talking to his harem of businessmen, of arms dealers.
Yeah. Oh, did you know, did you notice the guy, the top men was in there? Porkins. Yeah. Porkins is in this movie.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anyway, sorry,
and Randy. So is Horace Slughorn from the Harry Potter films.
That's right.
Slughorn is one of those guys. Every time he was talking to them, I'm just like, okay, now why don't they kill him? Like, that would make it a lot easier on them. Like, once they've made all this money selling new nukes to replace the ones that's the plot, right? Mm-hmm. They're selling new nukes to rogue states.
No nukes.
Yeah. Apparently it's been the Cold War ended for about 3 days, and then everybody started buying up nukes again.
Yep.
Good job, Superman.
That is a like every Lex Luthor story has to have him making a bunch of money and inheriting a bunch of land. But this one was really weak.
Yeah.
This did not make sense.
I agree. Felt really dumb. Also, I missed Ned Beatty in this. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
The nephew is no stand in for Ned Beatty's.
No, he's not.
What was the character? Oh, shit.
Ollie.
No.
Ollie.
It wasn't Polly. It was something.
Ollie.
No, it wasn't Ollie right? either. No, it's something else. Mm. Here, we can look it up. It's
Otis.
Otis.
Yeah. The town drunk.
I was close.
Yeah, you were very close. I have a picture of Christopher Reeves kissing Michael Caine on my screen for some reason. That's what I'm doing there.
And I like it.
Save that for later.
There was a part where I was grossed out, so let's have a little. This is Scott's gross out moment. This movie was harder to find it in, but it happened. So where did it happen? Does anyone know? Also, can I just say this? If you walked into Mariel Hemingway's office and she was sitting on the desk
God.
I wanted to die. That is a sign of mental malfunction. You're not.
But she's got some nice legs, right?
Oh, yeah, she does. But dude, she's a very attractive woman.
Got some nice stems going on there.
That is the very definition of, you might be trying too hard.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so dumb. Anyway, so what grossed me out? Not that that was not a hint about her or anything. It wasn't her.
Right. I think it had to be Superman when he was sick at home with the flu.
Nope.
Yeah.
I got it.
Okay.
It's Nuclear Man scratching him with those ridiculous fingernails.
No, but that was up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that was those fingernails I so wish Superman had lasered them off.
Yeah. They were like the Lee press-ons. That's so funny. I was just going to say Lee press-ons. Oh, my gosh. We clearly grew up at the same time.
I
did not come up
with anything that I thought you'd find disgusting in this film. It's
going to seem dumb, and I admit it's kind of dumb, but this is all I can think about, and it's not the first time Superman's done it, but it's when he is blowing something out or blowing something away. Yeah, all I can think about is, my gosh, that's not just super blow. That is super breath, man.
Super breath.
And so I don't care if you're Superman or not. You're just blowing, lunch haze all over the freaking land. It's too much when he blows on stuff. I don't like it.
Well, and I don't understand ice breath because Superman is powered by the sun. He is warm, right? Mm-hmm. To the touch. He's mm-hmm. kind of hot.
Yeah.
I don't see how he could remove heat by blowing.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
It makes
to me.
Zero sense to me.
He should be able to breathe fire. That would make total sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't get
that usually would not solve many problems though. And that's the here, let me blow some fire on that lava for you.
I'm okay with him blowing things out in terms of the power being so powerful that his lungs are capable of blowing things out or blowing a car away. Like they created like a hurricane in that city with all those the phantom people like Zod and everybody blowing all the time. And that I'm okay with because there's a strength aspect to that, but the ice makes no sense. And I don't know that there's any other examples of this. Is this canon for Superman to have ice breath?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he does it multiple times. It makes no sense.
Okay. He shouldn't do that. He should have pulled
it. I agree.
He should have taken the logo off his shirt and contained the lava that way.
I could imagine Superman inhaling and cooling something, right?
Yeah.
Inhaling the heat makes sense.
Oh, sure. There you go.
Sure. Yeah. That I could see. But no.
Like reversing your ceiling fan.
Yeah.
Kind of right. Thing.
He doesn't just suck, he blows.
But where does he, if he sucks it all in, what does he do with it?
Farts. Doesn't matter, he's Superman.
Magic fart. Right. Just farts out.
Bad air in, good air out.
Bad air in.
When Superman farts, it's the best air in the universe.
How do you think he flies? Okay. Hey guys, a quick conversation about our friends at Audible. Oh, Audible. I love these guys. Audible has unmatched selections of audiobooks, original shows, news and comedy, and more. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're, I don't know, doing whatever, driving, stuck in traffic, jogging, whatever it may be, doing errands maybe, shopping, all the things we humans do. For our audience, Audible is offering a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. And if you want to listen to it, Audible has it. Just go to audible.com/filmsack and browse their unmatched selection of audio content. Download a free title and start listening today. It's that easy. I love Audible. Every Audible book I listen to, I love. I'm currently listening to some really old stuff. I don't want to embarrass myself and tell you how old it is, but it's old. Let's say it's in the classics. And one of them is read by Claire Danes, which is super exciting. Anyway, all right, it's The Handmaid's Tale, okay? The Handmaid's Tale. I want to watch the Hulu show, so I'm excited about it, so I got it at Audible, and I'm listening to it now. All right, so there's the deal. Here's your offer, though. Don't forget, get a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial at audible.com/filmsack. Thanks, Audible. We should get to some. I got some clips. Let's do some clips. And yes. They're numerous and awesome. And I just captured a ton of them. So here's Canadian Sinatra. There you go. You get the last part.
Canadian Sinatra? Comrade
Sinatra.
No, not comrade. Canadian. Sorry, comrade. Yeah. Not Canadian. Did I say Canadian?
Canadian, yeah.
I didn't mean that.
It's like, I don't remember Canadian.
I meant comrade. I'm saying all Canadians are communists. Okay, that's what I was saying. Here's, I don't know what this is.
I'd like all the people back there to know that our subway system is still the safest and most reliable means of public transportation. Thank you.
Oh, my Lord.
This Thank public you. Service Thank announcement you. Brought to you by...
Thank you.
Then oh, well, Superman said it, so I guess it's okay. Yeah. Right, there's right after that, Lois is in the crowd. Superman! Superman! Mm-hmm. Oh, no, he missed. He didn't pay attention to me.
Another time. Well,
but three, he was trying to avoid her, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like four movies later, and she still acts like she's trying to get Axl Rose's attention at a GNR concert.
Oh, man.
Nice one, dude. Nice one. All right, here's, I don't know what this, I wrote helping me? I don't know what this is.
Mr. White, Lacey will be helping you.
Helping me? Helping me what?
What? That guy was on his last leg.
What?
Perry White was about to not be there anymore, I don't think. He died pretty quick after this, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think so. He looked really frail to me. Mm-hmm. I hope he was okay. Rip from today's headlines, folks. Here you go.
But a reporter's first allegiance has to be to the truth. The people of this city depend on us, and we can't let them down.
I don't know. It was hard for me to separate today's political climate from some of the comments that were happening. Also, I don't know if anyone else felt this way, but when he picked up the Statue of Liberty and started flying toward town, he was flying specifically toward the Twin Towers. And it just made me feel uncomfortable.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it made me feel weird. Now, that's not where he dropped it ultimately, but that's the direction he was going. And in my head, I'm like, oh my gosh, did this movie, is this one of those movies where the towers are a target of a scene?
Right.
And now everyone can't watch those scenes anymore because it's just it's too close to the bone.
I kept thinking that this is going to be the answer to where the head came in Cloverfield. Is what I kept thinking.
Oh, finally makes sense.
I was somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, you were going way down the line. Here's a weird teach. Oh, the teacher voice I thought was weird. Here's this teacher at school. Again, another subplot that went nowhere. But anyway, here's this.
Now, I know you're all upset by the crisis. The best thing we can do is to try to think positively.
That's right.
I remember thinking it was kind of weird. Did not think it was as weird as hearing it without seeing it.
Yeah. She sounds like she's like Nick Tortelli's wife. Yeah. It's like, you guys, the crisis is a real problem.
The children are our future. I just kept waiting for
that
to break
actress,
into song.
Yeah.
Is named Jane Brooke, and we saw her in Gattaca.
Oh.
What?
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Was she sort of just standing there in a suit, not moving? Like she was.
Yeah, she's like a two line other woman in the place where he works.
Did she say, "I know you're not really perfect, and those skin cells are from the guy at your apartment."
She's in Kindergarten Cop as the shoot. I'm now just seeing where I recognize her from. She's not Penelope Ann Miller, obviously, but she's the other.
Is
the mom of the abused kid that he helps.
Oh.
Or something.
Okay.
Yeah, totally from that. I couldn't place it until you said that, and I looked up her name. Thank you. Thank you, Randy.
Mr. Schwarzenegger, help me with my kid.
Thank you, Randy, for finding her for me.
And what was the point of this? Because the hair. Because the kid gives the world the idea of getting rid of the nukes, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was his idea.
I mean, and then that's...
Yeah, and he went through the tabloid newspaper guy to do it. Oh, my Lord. It's so bad, so loose, so dumb. They just are. This is one of the laziest films I've ever seen. All right, here's the class dick. Same scene, but here's the class dick.
Why don't we write to our congressman?
That'll do a lot of good.
You little piece of shit. What a little
I'll
tell dick.
You we should write to.
We should write to our congressman.
Who that do, a-hole? He's such a little penis. And all of them are. Here's more of the kids are dicks.
I tell you, I'd write a letter to that would do some good.
Who, Santa Claus?
No, Superman.
Good Lord. They're all a-holes.
That's like the worst class ever. class of little a-hole kids.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a special.
We're putting you in the special class.
They're
God,
awful.
You're all stupid.
They're awful, dude. Awful. All right, here's something about the 100,000-pound hair holder deal.
Here you can see a 1,000-pound load easily suspended by his single hair.
Okay, great. That's good.
Sorry, still had to laugh at a 1,000-pound load.
Yeah.
Well, he is Superman. wish Superman would have said yes, I wrote.
I just said I wish Superman would have said yes.
All right, you little piece of garbage. Go back to class. I hate that kid.
Right. Superman tells boy to suck it.
Scott tells boy to drop dead.
Really don't like that kid. Here's some stunted dialogue for you from, I think it's Hemingway.
I know I'm forbidden to interfere. And yet the Earth is threatened by the same fate as Krypton.
Never mind, that was Superman. That wasn't Errol Hemingway. But it was still pretty stunted. And again, he did a lot of these like earnest camera moments where he tried to say important things and it just came off as so dumb. Someone's freezing their butt off.
What am I doing out here freezing my butt off?
Okay.
Wow. She's not good at delivering lines,
nope,
I've noticed.
No.
Oh, this was when she was, wasn't she having trouble with?
It was right after this, wasn't it?
Yeah, when was her little episode where she...
Like during her time that she was having trouble?
Yeah. When was that? It was after this, I think, but it was shortly
after
this.
She
was naked.
Probably started drinking after this.
Well, wasn't she naked in somebody's yard and showed up at the door naked?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Margot Kidder, let's see.
I get it because NH did a similar thing, so I can't remember who.
Oh my gosh, Margot Kidder is 68 years old. Weird.
Yeah.
Margaret.
Yeah,
Ruth
it was funny
Kidder.
Because she was such a different generation. Because my, I was asked last night, why is she Lois Lane? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm like, well, I don't know. Back in 87, or actually before then, during the first one, she made a pretty good Lois Lane, I thought, but I don't know.
Oh, this was 96 that she had this problem.
Really?
Kidder had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, which was the cause of a widely publicized manic episode where she experienced that she experienced in April of 1996. At the time, Kidder had been working on an autobiography when her laptop computer was infected by a virus, which caused it to crash and lose her 3 years' worth of drafts. Kidder flew to Los Angeles to have the computer examined by a data recovery company, ultimately something. Kidder then entered a manic state and disappeared for 4 days. She was found in the backyard of a homeowner and was taken to the Los Angeles Police Department naked and in a distressed state. The caps on her teeth, having been knocked out during the purported...
Oh, my gosh.
Someone tried to rape her, it said. Wow, this sounds bad. Oh,
wow. You know, I didn't know the circumstances behind it. I just knew there was news reports during the time. But I'm telling you, if I was working for 3 years on something, and then I might would do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a great commercial for Dropbox.
Yeah.
Right.
She's Canadian, by the way.
iCloud.
I didn't know she was Canadian, but she's totally Canadian. Weird.
It's kind of weird to think of someone at that time. Now, remember what it was like when you had computer at that time, and maybe you were writing something. It's hard to think of someone writing something and not printing out each page.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, that's just what people did. We used to print a lot of crap.
Yeah. Well, part of that was your backup. Like, if a drive went dead, which was common. Yeah, we are spoiled today. We have no idea. Mm-hmm. We don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Kids today have no idea.
No. In fact, my wife, who had rarely used Google Docs up until recently, long story why, but... She just never really did it. And she comes up to me and she says, now, wait a minute. I'm just typing in here, but there's nowhere to save. I said, well, honey, it's saving as you do it. What? I said, yeah. She goes, that's amazing. So I got to experience this little microcosm of what it would be like to come, you know, to go back in time, grab one of those people, bring them forward and say, now use this computer and have them just be blown away. All right. Well, there's that. Let's see what else we got here. Oh, I know. More clips. And here's one. This is... get rid of them?
And so I've come to a decision. I'm going to do what our governments have been unwilling or unable to do. Effective immediately, I'm going to rid our planet of all nuclear weapons.
I think other some countries would go, whoa, hold up, hold up. Yeah,
what? Exactly. Wait a minute.
I think Iran or North Korea would be like, yeah. You guys go on ahead. We're going to hold on to ours if that's
It would have been awesome if there'd been a little shot of a bunch of men walking out in the back.
Yeah.
And they were all dressed really, you know, ethnocentrically.
Yeah. Well, there was one, and I don't know if I put this GIF, I made a GIF of it, but as he walks out of the UN, a guy in a very sort of stereotypic Arabic headset, you know, looking like a sheik, basically, is like clapping for him and bowing to him as he walks out. And it struck me as, I don't know, kind of a striking image for whatever reason.
Right. It's ridiculous mainly because the UN is nothing compared to Superman. Mm-hmm. Like the UN can't accomplish much compared to what Superman can. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's kind of weird how he talks about our governments and he has all this respect, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. It comes from this weird place where, I guess Americans and other sort of jingoists have this belief that Superman would be, you know, morally perfect.
Yeah. And it closely aligns with American values has always been the thing. Well, I mean, that's how he was created. His inception is that. So it's not that surprising that stuff shows up once in a while. And a lot of people don't like the last two movies because they don't express that kind of thing. Like this alignment with these simpler values or whatever. It's a actually kind of a complicated thing. If you make a movie about Superman today and make it this same sort of jingoistic sort of point of view,
it
strikes hollow. But if you do it too far the other way where you're too cynical, then it's like, well, what is Superman? What are we even doing this for? So I don't know. It's hard. Superman's in a weird place.
Well, we had a lot of national pride during the rise of Batman and Superman and Captain America. I mean, so we kind of elevated those guys to an ideal at that time, but we've become much more cynical.
Yeah, they used to punch Nazis and take out Hitler and stuff, and now it's just different now. And it's hard. I mean, Zack Snyder notwithstanding, I don't envy the guys that have to make new Superman content because I think it's difficult. I think it's hard to strike the right balance. The way you do it, I think, is give him the moral backbone that he's always had. And even when others around him, including the UN, including the US, including whoever, falter or become less than perfect examples of his ideal, he can still be the ideal. And then build your conflicts around that. Because that's what I like about Superman, is he's always going to do the right thing.
Yeah, imagine if everyone in the room at the UN was like, wait, what? No. And then he just flies off and does it. Like, there's a very different balance there.
It's a very interesting, it's a much more interesting story. And they didn't.
And that's one of the things I love about the Batman-Superman story, when it's told properly, when Batman is being cynical and Superman is being, you know, altruistic, and Batman's always kind of consider Superman kind of like a nuclear weapon. He's very important, but he also wants to make sure that he's in control of it. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really good story.
It's a great story, and they blew it with this movie because they didn't explore any of that stuff. They really could have done. Oh, I was so excited about that because that is one of the great conflicts in comic history. Period. Mm-hmm. Like this uneasy alliance between the vigilante and the Boy Scout. And those methods, why those methods don't jive, also why Batman is sometimes wrong and doesn't think he is, and why Superman's wrong and doesn't think he is. Like, it's a great exploration, and they do that so well in the comics. The movies have just failed to do it yet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's Gene Hackman doing a French voice.
If you didn't buy it from Jean-Pierre, you didn't buy it on the black market.
Patrick would be thrilled.
There was a little bit of French love in this movie, from Lois Lane's trip that got canceled to France, and you know she was dropping the French occasionally. And it was. Mm. Were we in love with the French in 87?
Yeah, I think we're always sort of in love with the French, sort of.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even at times where we're mad at the French, I think we still love. I think we want to go over there and, you know, eat cheese and grow our armpit hair out.
I do. I was hoping that clip-wise you would have the thing that kind of led to that whole France Lois Lane trip where Hemingway says, effective immediately, all trips are canceled. And then Lois goes, you mean my trip to Paris is canceled?
Yeah, yeah.
It's what?
Like, it's like, no, when I say all trips, I meant yours isn't. Here's, oh, this is great. Check it.
Over here, Clarky.
Over here, Clarky, says the guy at the gym.
The workout guy.
Yeah, that was, again, a total waste of time at the gym. Total
oh
waste.
Oh, my gosh, the gym scenes.
So
oh,
it's such a waste.
So painful.
Clarky. Okay, here's more.
But wait. You know, Lois is doing that interview with Superman about his peace mission?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was thinking the four of us could get together and go to my hotel suite and have high tea. It's very chic.
Ugh. Ugh.
Yeah. All he had to do was just say, no, I'm sorry, I'm busy. And avoid the whole, like, one guy, two girls trying to keep them both
almost,
occupied.
It's almost like when Superman becomes Clark Kent, he also turns off a big part of his brain and his history.
You know, it did annoy me as well, but then I was like, you know, he has to keep this ruse up where he is convincing people that are close to him that he's two different people. So he sometimes takes... When an opportunity comes up where he can be two people, I think he kind of plays towards it. It fits in with his secret identity he's trying to reinforce.
But could you, here's the problem. The minute those three entered that hotel, here's what played in my head. Come and knock on our door.
Yeah, totally.
Because then they spent the next 20 minutes
because
of him
two
being
girls
Jack
and
Tripper.
A guy, right?
Yeah, and one's a brunette, one's a blonde, and the
and
guy
it's
is trying
to... It's just a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, and he keeps leaving as Clark and coming back as Superman. Like, it was just like, it was a bad episode of Three's Company. Mm-hmm. Ugh, annoyed me. All right, here's I put this dialogue, whatever that is.
Come early, the view is so romantic from my balcony. See ya.
Come early. It's so great to see you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes perfect tonal sense. Here's You Are Nothing.
You are nothing. I am the father now.
You have my voice.
No, you have my voice.
All right. Geez, make up your mind.
I am the father now.
Is that just, I mean, there's no other reason. It's not like they put any of Lex Luthor's DNA in there, right? It was like a teaspoon of carbon. Some fragments of cloth,
a little bit of hair
into his suit.
Yeah,
I think he did. I think he did put his. He put his John Cryer's DNA in there, didn't he? Or maybe he put his own. I can't remember. There was a point in time that he talked about. Mixing the two.
The protoplasm. We remember him saying that. Well, here's a protoplasm from Superman's hair, and then some carbon and some shavings of a...
I just kept thinking that's not how science works. No. I just the whole time I had so much trouble with that.
I can't get over how easily in every movie Lex Luthor bamboozles the military.
Yeah.
Every movie.
He's good at it.
If there's military guys operating, he's just going to steamroll them by putting on a costume and talking.
Yeah.
And that just... I'm sorry. No.
Also, fire those guards at the prison pit because they were the dumbest guards I've ever known or seen.
Oh, but didn't you enjoy the fact that they lived? I mean, because they got flown off that cliff in Boss Hogg, John Cryer... car. I mean, that thing flew high.
It was totally a Boss Hogg car.
So there's the point where we ought to talk about, this is a rated PG movie.
Yeah.
And they, and boy, did they try really, really hard to make sure they stuck with PG rating, to the point that you almost start feeling like they're in a rubber universe where no one can really get hurt.
Yep. Yeah. I got that impression as well. It's very, very PG across the board. But then they do some things I find skin crawly today, you know, like, I don't know, there's some of the fights and the, I don't know, some of that stuff just I'm never going to forget the moon fight ever. Like the moon fight,
ever.
The moon fight is burned into my head. And in some ways it's great. Like it's just the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And I would watch that scene over again with people I like, but I'm not watching the rest of the movie around it.
I loved when Superman popped up out of his nail hammer into the ground and the moon, and he jumps out and he's so optimistic that he just jumps out and straightens the American flag back up before he goes off to do his business.
Fixes the flag, the one that so obviously had a rod sticking out at a right angle at the top.
Right.
Annoyed me. Yeah. Here's the nephew. So we get a little John Cryer.
Wow, I'm break dancing. Hey, this rocks. Hey.
Oh my gosh, dude. Oh, he's so bad.
What was he trying to channel? I couldn't never quite put my hand on what he was trying to channel.
I don't know. A decade.
Poochie from The Simpsons. The dog that... oh, no.
That was a great episode. Here's I put She Kills Me.
It's so boring up there with Lois and Superman. Let's go do something wild.
She drove me crazy in this. I couldn't deal with her. And by the way, what's the point of that dual love triangle? Was it just... Clark's got a girlfriend, and Superman's got a girlfriend. One of them doesn't like Clark, but the other one does. One of them used to like both, but she's been kissed out of it. Like, she's been
kissed. I don't know. I have a really hard time forgiving Superman for gaslighting people mentally. Like, I can't stop thinking, okay, but how do any of them know anything? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just in control of all of what they know.
Yep.
How many times... has he kissed Jimmy Olsen? That's all I want to know.
Once. Jimmy Olsen doesn't know. He has no idea. It's very invasive, that move, for sure.
Yeah. It is.
Here's Dude of Steel.
Luther, I suspect if you'd actually planted a bomb, you'd be miles away from here by now. This is my nephew, Lenny. He worships me.
The Dude of Steel.
Oh, my God.
Roy!
excellent.
That's what it is.
To be fair, we really did think that people like him talked like that back then.
Did we?
We really did.
Did
yes,
we?
Yes, we really did. This is not even one of the only 1,000 top portrayals of this person with this weird accent.
I'd put Spicoli way above this, and that's basically the Spicoli voice. I mean, that's basically what he's trying to channel, and I think he does a really poor job of it. Here he is saying what?
Lenny!
What?
All right, so there's that. here's this one with that dude who's given Superman an ultimatum.
If you will not tell me, I will hurt people.
I hurt people.
Okay. That was my favorite. And the thing I hope you captured what Superman had to say, like, after that about the people.
I don't remember.
The people!
Oh, no, I may not have gotten that. Let me see.
It's Lex Luthor. He's going to hurt people anyway.
Yeah, he's going to always
hurt people. It doesn't
matter
what you do.
Yeah, he's Lex Luthor. But, of course, it's really hard to take Lex Luthor seriously when his music, whenever he's on, is doot, 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 doot.
Is it the tuba a lot of times for Lex Luthor? Yeah, I noticed that. It was
so
weird.
So dumb. All right, here's, I don't know what this is.
Yay!
Oh, yay. Sounds like dub over like in a Japanese film or something they always do.
What part is that from?
That's from when the newspaper, it turned out that he bought the newspaper back.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. The happy ending. Yes.
Yeah. So Lois Lane says,
yay.
Wow. She sounds like she's cheering a trick at a child's birthday party.
Kind of. Here's what the F does this mean, Superman? Well, hold on.
I just wish you could all see the Earth the way that I see it. Because when you really look at it, it's just one world.
What? I don't know. I don't know what he means. Look at the world the way I
see it. I
think
he means that we're divided as a people.
Yeah. Is that what he means?
Think.
It was a bad speech.
Maybe.
It was a bad speech.
I thought he meant from the moon or something. Like, we can't fly to the moon. We can't breathe space air like you do.
See what I mean? Yeah. And space again, air. This is time has passed. I'll bet we might have thought that was really deep 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we've seen, you know, the Winston Inception story for Overwatch.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's got such a better motto there.
Yeah, it does. It makes even our simplest modern stories seem extremely complex. So well done, Superman. You did it. Here's Lenny being dropped off at a boys' school. So here's this.
Hey, this rocks. Hey.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you have a drum kit?
Just remember, John Cryer got paid to do this.
Yeah, he got money. Who knows how much, but he got money. And then I wrote every boy. I don't know what every boy means. Hold on.
Every boy can be helped, Superman.
Oh, that's what it was.
That's the guy at the boys' school.
Yeah, creepy priest saying every boy can be
helped. I can help every boy.
Yeah.
Every boy can be helped, Superman.
Did I mention I'm 22 and you're taking me into a boys' place?
Yeah. Don't worry about us, Superman. We got this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that signals the end of the thing. Let's play this now. The film sack checklist goes like this. Forget what we know about space. This lady can breathe air and not freeze. Check. an embarrassing end to the greatest Superman we ever had. Check. Unless you like Brandon Routh better, I guess. We've already been through that. A complete waste of Gene Hackman's time. Check. Here's your Star Trek stuff.
It was so bad, it made me start wondering, is this the best Gene Hackman ever did? Like, what, like all that, you know, like, was this really Christopher Reeve? Like, maybe he wasn't that great. I mean, that's how bad this movie is. It makes you question everything.
Yeah, I agree. But I think that ultimately, I mean, Gene Hackman would go on to prove disprove all of that. He's amazing. Co-writer of this movie was also the co-writer of Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. He co-wrote that with Leonard Nimoy and Lawrence Connor. Lawrence Connor did the screenplay, also co-wrote that, of course. And let's see, Alex Courage. It's a great name.
Yeah. Alexander Courage.
Yeah, Alexander Courage. He was the conductor here for the music. In TOS, he wrote several scores, including the main title theme. So he's your...
No, you mean TNG, right?
Nope, TOS, original series.
I remember seeing Alex Courage credited in several different spots in The Next Generation.
He may have done more. I don't think he's around anymore, right?
Yeah.
He passed, I think. Soundtrack grade, I'd give it an SLTO for sort of like the original. And let's see. Oh, this is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Superman 4, the most ridiculous hero ever invented, doesn't die in this one. Sorry.
Oh, that's too bad. Oh, sorry, not sorry is what you mean. Hashtag sorry, not sorry. Also, Brian Dunaway.
Superman 4, like writing a letter to your congressman. What good would that do? Now come here and kiss me to forget this crap turd.
Like writing to the Santa Claus. Also, finally, wrapping it up, Brian Ibbett.
Superman 4. Superman decides to become world conscious and tries to end the Cold War, but apparently couldn't give a smaller shit about the environment and invents mountaintop removal strip mining.
Oops. Went ahead and got one step forward, three steps back.
That's right.
Oh, look. It's the alternate titles just handed to me. Pound Sand, because the moon, you know, the fight on the moon.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Or I was mooned by Christopher Reeves. Hey. We got a couple emails from emailers who send us emails to filmsack@gmail.com. We like to end the show with these, and we got one here from AP who says, hello, Scott, Brian, and Randy. If I don't know the age of the film, if I don't know it was a Coen Brothers joint, if you told me it was a Wes Anderson film, if you told me prior to filming Wes Anderson rolled out a bunch of dry dirt, if you told me Wes Anderson refused to wash throughout the production, I would believe you if you said that all of those things were attributed to Barton Fink. Love the show, though, AP. So that's his Barton Fink summation.
All right. Yes, we did. Okay. Those are all facts.
Film Sackers says, Aaron, second email, says, thanks. Thank you, Scott. I was listening to Barton Fink and laughing and having a good time, and then clips, and then I'm driving and I cannot stop the playback. The horror that suddenly came over me as you were going to play the puking clip. He said, he says, I was sure I was going to start puking in the car, but then the warning of the clip would be 7 seconds long. I quickly pulled the earbuds out of my ear and counted to 8 and put them back in my ear safe and sound. Was a very close call. Aaron, happy he didn't puke in his car. Is the yeah.
What if other bodily expulsions work that way for people? Like, what if the sound of someone peeing for like 5% of humans made them pee? Like, they just couldn't help themselves.
That may be a fact. I don't know.
Like brown notes.
That may be a phenomenon.
You ever heard of the brown notes? Like a certain pitch?
Yeah. Spontaneous pooping.
Let's see if it works. Actually, there's a YouTube brown note. Let's see if it works on us. You guys want to try it?
No.
Come on, let's try it. Let's see what happens. I doubt it. It's not going to work, is it?
Sure.
It's not going to work.
Already got a poop. Urban legend. Do it.
It's an urban legend.
So let's just try it. Here's the brown note.
We're no strangers to love. You know the rules.
No.
Okay. So, all right. So it keeps giving me warnings. Okay. There, this is supposed to be it.
Oh.
Is that working on you?
It's just an uncomfortable tone.
Yeah, maybe it just makes people have to poo because it sucks. And then at the end,
it reminds me. Me of those tests we had to take in school with the headphones and raise your hand whenever you hear it.
That would have been good.
By the way, if you are out driving right now and we just ruined your front seat, let us know. Email
Please
us.
Send us an email.
You can do that or just go to Olive Garden like I did last night. And that'll get you when you're there, you're family. All right. Hey.
I'll take a brown note salad.
Yeah, like the brown
still
note.
Have to pay.
Brown note pasta, please. Anyway, huge thanks to your emails. You can send those to filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is Bedazzled, is it?
Yes.
It's 2 weeks
the
from now, though.
The old one.
We should make a, we should make a point that next week there is no show. We've got some travelers among us, but when we get back the following week, it will be Bedazzled.
Next week, we're taking off President's Day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing.
That's right.
We're not really doing that, but yes, we'll say that we are. It's fine. but yeah, we'll be taking a break, but after that, we'll have another episode. I think the next one after that is Jaws, like straight up Jaws.
And now the original.
Yeah, yep. Which is the good one, and which Jaws I feel like one. Is, we saw, what, 3D? Three?
Yeah, three.
We definitely saw three, Louis Gossett Jr., and I thought we saw another one, but I guess not.
No.
I don't think so.
I think
Shark, one we've ever seen.
Sharknado probably makes us feel like we've seen all the sharks we ever need to see again, but... But one is a big deal, man. Like one is a groundbreaking piece of work. It's Spielberg's foray into being the mega blockbuster dude ever, and I'm sure Dunaway will have some complaints about that. So that'll be good.
And a real cultural.
No, that was when Spielberg was the man.
Mm. And when did he not become the man? When was he stopping being the man? In your estimation?
For me, it was around AI. I mean, when he had his little dance with Kubrick, that's when he started trying to do things that weren't so Spielberg.
So like 2000 and 2000, something like that.
Yeah, okay. I really think that Kubrick destroyed Spielberg for a moment and really put him back a little bit because Spielberg tried to become something he wasn't, in my opinion.
Is it weird that I kind of like that movie? That I like AI? I don't think it's that bad.
I don't. Which one? The first?
Yeah. Which ending?
The,
yeah. Exactly. Right.
I don't know if I've seen both endings. I think I've only seen
theatrical. No. You've seen the whole movie, and there are five endings to the movie.
Oh,
like,
because it goes so long.
Him at the bottom of the ocean, and then he wakes up, and he has a little chat with the angel of amusement park rides.
Good point.
And then,
point. These are all good points.
I'd like to have like a oral history of Spielberg and know what it changed for him, you know, his process when he became a 10 millionaire, then a 100 millionaire, then a billionaire, like... When he became a billionaire, you know, like, is he still making movies the same way he used to be? Because I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Oh, he's definitely not. If you've seen some stuff behind the BFG, that was some really amazing stuff and how they're...
He didn't make the BFG, really, did he? Did he make the BFG?
Yeah.
Did he make the BFG?
No.
Just last year.
And so he's... some of the stuff he's doing now, some of the technology that he's using for pre-production now is that process is amazing.
Oh, Steven Spielberg. I didn't know he was a BFG director. Oh. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Okay, but he made right before that. He made that really great Spy Bridge deal.
Yeah. And that's when I feel like he had his return to Spielberg form.
Really,
was the Bridge of Spies was the first time that I really felt like he is. Had returned
you
for
don't,
me.
You don't think
and, you
the
know,
one
that's his opinion.
You don't think the one about the 70s. Terrorist spy filler thing. What was that called? Not Minsk. Milan.
Mincemeat.
That was it.
No, you're right. It was the Olympic.
Yes.
Bombing thing.
And he's credited pretty high for that.
Right. For me, it wasn't. Like I said, that's all opinion.
Okay.
Munich? That's his opinion.
Yeah. Munich. Okay. So here are the things he's done. Oh, Ready Player One's in post production. I didn't know they were that far into that. Wow. Cool. All right, Lincoln. That was good, Lincoln. Man, War Horse. That was cool.
Mm, War Horse was good.
Yeah, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I mean, come on.
Next, what else?
Yeah, War of the Worlds. I liked. I know. Brian didn't.
No,
like.
See, I like. See, there's a difference between
the
what
Terminal.
You may think.
What about the Terminal? Terminal was great.
I liked those movies, but they did not feel. It felt like Spielberg was full. It's just. Feeling around, groping around. It didn't feel like what he is naturally.
Catch Me If You Can.
To me.
Fine film. Catch Me If You Can. Mm-hmm. It was good. Minority Report. Hell of a film.
Scott's just listing
just
Spielberg
waiting,
movies
just
backwards.
To get to that one. Yeah.
So for you, it was Saving Private Ryan is the last bastion of it because that was 98. And you think AI, which was in 2001, which was his next film, It's from there that things get dicey. Okay.
Yeah. To me, it's, like I said, to me, that's my personal take. How I like my Spielberg is not how it was for a while.
Yeah. I can see that. I mean, Jaws, what's crazy is Jaws was his first big thing. There was other stuff before that, but it was mostly TV episodes. Jaws was his first big thing. It wasn't until Raiders of the Lost Ark that things really took off for him, even though Close Encounters was pretty cool. But I always forget Raiders is only his fourth film. And he has directed more than...
I remember The Duel.
161 film credits, and that was just his fourth in.
Or was it just called Duel? The one with the guy and the TV Weaver, movie, Dennis 72. Weaver. Was that a TV movie? Okay, yeah, I thought that was TV a... movie. I mean, I only ever saw it on TV.
But that's where he got his big launch from, though. So yeah.
Sorry, my bad. 55 film direction credits, and it was his fourth film in for Indiana Jones. And his 55th film will be Indiana Jones 5. Is currently not titled, so we'll see how that goes. Please no.
Please Shia LaBeouf. Please Shia LaBeouf.
No,
all Shia LaBeouf all the time.
No Shia LaBeouf. I don't think he ends up being a. I don't know what they do, but they got a real. They really have to redeem themselves after four. That was a poopski movie.
You know.
Anyway,
except for Shia LaBeouf.
Primarily because of Shia LaBeouf for me. I can't stand that guy. I can't stand him. I like him, and there's been a few movies where he impresses me.
Good enough.
He's good enough. But
I think he doesn't bother me.
He drives me nuts.
I just think he wasn't our generation.
So when I say I don't like him, you go no. That's what you say.
I feel like I think maybe we give him a little bit too much crap. I think he does. I don't know.
I'm trying to think of something she has done, Shia has done that I really enjoy. It certainly wasn't
Pulse.
Pulse all right.
Didn't see Pulse.
I enjoyed it. I did.
The Sia
easy
video.
To be annoyed by,
the Sia video is kind of cool. I like that.
It feels really.
It's creepy.
Feels really weird.
It's
creepy
but me. But I like I like those weird. Her videos are weird anyway. Mm-hmm. I like her music. And her hair is a lampshade. She doesn't ever show her face anymore.
I thought LaBeouf was just fine in the first Transformers film. Yeah, that movie had way bigger problems around him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's fine.
I don't know.
I made the mistake.
He's just he's crazy, which is what you key on, right? You hate him because he's making YouTube videos that are bizarre.
Oh, you know what he's good in? He's good in that tank movie with Brad Pitt. Fury.
That's where he got the fist fight, right? With Brad Pitt, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he doesn't get along with anybody.
Yes,
he's
that
just
was
kind
really
of a,
good.
He's just what kind of a dick.
Not
tank. No, it was Sergeant Fury.
Fury.
No, it was
Fury.
Yeah.
I did really. I thought it was Sergeant Fury when I first saw it.
He was
it. I was like, "Oh,
he's in a Tom Hardy movie about Prohibition as well. He was pretty good in. I can't remember the name of that movie though. So yeah, he's got his moments, but it's usually second
it's like
tier.
He makes me really think of Leonardo DiCaprio. I mean,
really? Oh my God,
he's like the next generation.
No,
of that to me,
no,
no, I know it's not a real good comparison.
No,
but
no.
There's tenths of it there, you know.
I like that you made it a song at the end. I don't know. That was great.
No.
All right. Well, we have gone long. Thank you all for listening to us and enjoying this episode. This movie was less time than our episode. So I don't know what that says. It says something. There's a lesson there.
So you could go watch the movie now, and you know what's the problem with that?
It's shorter. It's no problem. It's like four episodes of Seinfeld. Think of it that way. All right. Hey, check us out on the site, filmsack.com. We love your comments on the blog, so head on over there and leave your thoughts about this movie and more. You can leave us voicemails at 801-471-0462. Again, the email address is filmsack@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter @filmsack. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Uh-huh.
We'll see you next time.
The people!
The people! No!
Screw that.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Root, nah.